Welcome to the Into the Void podcast with your host, Sammy Starr. Step into the void.
All right. So welcome to the Into the Void podcast, everyone. This is the second episode. We're welcoming my friends, Crashing Atlas. How's everybody doing? Everybody amazing. Good? Awesome.
Very well. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you for having us on.
Wonderful.
No, Paul's thank calling you guys for coming.
I'm calling from prison.
It's always the best way to call. Thanking you guys for being on here because one, this is not only the second episode of this podcast, but you guys are also my first guest. So this is a very great time for you guys to be on here. Really appreciate it. You guys doing this for me. So what I do want to talk about is your new single that you guys have out now. This is Halloween.
It is Halloween.
What made you guys want to do this?
So we've always been talking, we're all big fans of the movie. We've always been talking about every time like Halloween comes around, we're like, man, I wish we would have, you know, a couple months ago, because it takes so long to really get a song, you know, from soup to nuts. You kind of got to start it pretty far in advance. And every time around October, like, man, I wish we'd have done something kind of Halloween related. So we decided to do this song before we actually looked at how difficult it would be to perform. So But yeah, that's how we kind of came about it. We're just huge fans of it, and we wanted to make something that we thought we'd enjoy.
I'm actually a pretty big fan of the movie and the song overall. I really thought, first of all, that you guys did a great job with this single. The vocal work is freaking fantastic, and the instrumentals are just amazing. The energy is just high in this song, and I think a lot of people will enjoy it. I think a lot of people do this song justice, but like, I think with your vocals in general, because you're so amazing at what you do, I think you brought a different kind of energy to this song that I think a lot of people are going to enjoy in a different kind of way. So I think that it's amazing that you guys chose to do this song. What first got you guys to get into music overall?
Wow. I don't know. I feel like it's one of those things where like, it just kind of calls you forever. You know, like, I don't think any of us ever were just like, I decide I'm going to do music today. Or like, I think I want to try this or something like that. It's always just like,
I did.
Paul did, because he's weird. But at least for me, like, it was just something that I was like, well, I always just really liked singing. And eventually I was like, well, I like singing, so I want to try and play guitar. Well, I like singing, so I want to try and play piano. I like doing this, so I want to try and write a song. And yeah, I didn't ever really like plan like, oh, I'm going to be in a band, I'm going to like do the whole like music thing or whatever. But just eventually you're like, I feel like I'm getting good at this and I want to try and do it like for real. So at least that's my story.
I think for me, it was just, I was just always that kid at shows and just seeing bands up on stage. And like, it seems so unobtainable to me. And like, I always looked at like, even like local crappy shows, like with like 10 people in a row, I looked at those people as like gods. Like, I was like, oh my God, like, how are they doing that up there? Like what, like, it was like a magical thing between 3, 4, 5 people up on a stage, and like sitting in my basement, sucking at like, you know, Nirvana and like Metallica songs and stuff. Like, I never thought in a million years that like I'd be like doing something where it was like my own. So it just blows my mind that I'm doing this right now. So yeah.
For me, I'm very lucky. My mom was always really supportive of music just in general in the household. We'd always be playing every Saturday, Sunday morning, she'd have it playing on the stereo. And I think the turning point for me was she took me out to go see the band Kiss live. And I remember, similar to like Doug said, you know, I was like 12 or 13 years old, and you see these like rock gods on stage, and it's just, it, I remember just leaving that concert like, this is so cool. I want to try and do it. And it was just, it made me feel so happy like seeing that.
For me, when I was like 6, my brother and I started with piano lessons, did that for a year. We didn't like it. So my brother then started playing trumpet for school. And then after like 2 or 3 lessons, we would go to this place. It was like a music store. They would give lessons. after like two or three lessons, I would go with my mom to drop him off. And my mom said, "Do you want to play an instrument?" And I just happened to be standing next to a drum set. And I'm like, "I want to play the drums. Let's do it." And I was kind of joking because I never thought that I would, that she would say yes to that ever, because it looked really big and expensive and loud. And then she's like, "Yeah, sure, drums." So kind of just fell into that one on accident as like a joke, and took private lessons at that store for 10 to 12 years and did other music. Now I'm here.
Now, I think I can kind of agree with you guys on that. I think what initially got me into music journalism was Newfound Glory. If I had to pick anything, it definitely was Newfound Glory that got me into music journalism. If I had to choose a live experience, it was definitely the Maine. Their live energy was definitely one of the most, that was like my first concert experience, and their live energy was so contagious that I felt that I had to be a part of that 24/7. And I knew then that, you know, music journalism was something that was going to be in my future. It's something that just calls to you. It's not something that you just like decide that you want to do. It's just something that you love doing. So I totally get where you guys are coming from on that. Who inspired you to create music? Like, as far as artist wise?
At least for me, like, I've always kind of been into singer songwriter stuff, like, and personally, like, I deal with some mental health issues and stuff, like depression. And when I was a kid, it was just really confusing, and I didn't really know what was going on or how to talk to you, because it kind of started for me really young. I was like 8 or 9, and I was just like, I just felt like I was seeing the world really differently than all my friends were seeing it, and I just wasn't able to kind of understand or whatever. I don't know. Like, I was just reacting to things more emotionally and processing things differently. And I didn't think that other people were really getting it. And then I would listen to music, and even like stupid stuff. Like, I would listen to like Avril Lavigne, who, you know, she's a really great songwriter and stuff. And I always felt really understood with that kind of thing. And I journaled a lot, and I was just like, man, I love music. I love journaling. I feel like spoken to in these kind of lyrics. I feel less alone. So I always just was like, well, let me see if I can turn this journaling and do what she does and do what all these other songwriters do that made me feel less alone and stuff.
First off, the first guitar riff that I ever heard was Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses. And that is what awoke in me. Like, it made me want to like grab the guitar. But on a songwriting perspective, it was Ben Burnley from Breaking Benjamin. He genuinely like, he taught me how to put together a song. Like, I just felt like he was like speaking to me in that way. And for me, like, that was like the awakening moment of like, yeah, I want to start a band. So Ben Burnley.
Probably on my end, like, one of the bands that I think really first kind of like, I don't know, made the light go off was, I was really into a band called Coheed and Cambria. And one of my favorite things about them is they write songs a bit differently, a little bit more on the progressive side. Bands like them and Tool that were, you know, were just writing stuff unlike anything I've ever heard when it comes to song structure wise. So starting off, those are my early influences. And I'm going to give the corny, my influences now are these three other people in the call with us. You know, I think as musicians, it's like the people you work with really end up influencing your style. And, you know, every past band member I've had probably has been some of the biggest influences to how I am now, the way I write, you know, specifically the people in this room.
I totally agree with you, Nick. It's totally like that. Every time you work with other musicians, like when I was a kid or even when I was a teenager and I knew I wanted to be in a band, I never knew what kind of music I would eventually end up making. You just kind of like, you fall in with certain people, you know, you mix and you see what they're into, they see what you're into, and it kind of just turns into a perfect concoction. So
my influence is, so like I did a lot of classical and like orchestral music when I was younger. And that kind of helped translate me into really getting to the band Dream Theater, which has a lot of like really cool instrumentals. And I think that plays like a huge part in my influence. And then on top of it, just bands like Led Zeppelin, Rush, even some more modern old people like Disturbed and Avenged Sevenfold, bands like that.
I like the term modern old people.
Right?
But that's what they are now. It's crazy. Like, David?
But they're still relevant too.
Yeah, right. But David Draymond's 50, man.
Yeah.
Corey Taylor from Slipknot, how old he is?
Yeah, like, Draymond just featured on something that got released like 2 days ago. You know. Like, yeah.
All right. Here's a fun question for you guys. If you had to pick anybody artist wise that you could collaborate with, who would it be and why?
Okay. I got a good answer for this one. Not because this is my favorite band or anything, but I really want to do a song with Dave Grohl. I like the Foo Fighters a lot. They're not one of my top bands of all time or anything like that. But like, I just think Dave Grohl has one of like the coolest voices in rock music. And I just have never really heard him do a song with a female collaborator. I mean, maybe a couple times, like duets or something like that. But I just like, I would kill to get Dave Grohl on one of our songs. Like, how cool would that be? Like the juxtaposition between his voice and like a woman's voice. I feel like that'd be so dope.
That would be pretty sick. And if you guys would ever do that, I would totally promote the crap out of that song.
I'd lose my mind.
Let's do it. Dave Grohl, if you are listening to this podcast, you need to make this happen. You need to make this happen.
Line is open.
The line is open, Mr. Grohl. Just make it happen.
Slide into our DMs, Mr. Grohl. Done. However he ends up in our DM.
However it needs to be made happen, we'll make it happen.
God, it's so hard to top Dave Grohl. I mean, he is the king. Oh wow. For me, it's so weird. Like I'm already like in my dream. Like I was lucky enough to Warp 2004. I got to see Paramore play literally on like a crate of pallets and, you know, Hayley Williams being like 15 years old. And I saw that and I was like, oh my God, like, this is like genius. Like, I want to be a part of something like this, like a female fronted, like badass woman band. And I don't know, for me, it'd probably be, I'm going to go older school on this. I'm going to go Debbie Harry from Blondie.
Ooh, okay.
I think it would be really, really cool to do she was the one who brought female fronted into everything. Everyone talks about Hayley Williams and rightfully so. She's like, you know, a goddess and a queen, and she, you know, she brought like that to what we do now. But I think people like kind of forget about the yesteryears. And right. That's what I want to bring. And Debbie Harry is me.
I'm going to pick a really weird one. I would actually say a musician that I've always kind of look up to, even though we don't sound anything like them, is Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails. And part of why I think he'd be such a cool guy to work for is he's definitely like a knows how to do kind of everything musician, and just getting his insight on how someone that can sing, can play guitar, plays bass, does synth, I'm sure he does drum stuff too. Like sure. How someone like him approaches writing a song with just all the tools in front of you, I think would be pretty mind bending. And just the variety of stuff he's worked on. Like, I think it'd be kind of cool to like pick his brain and see what, you know, how he can make our stuff sound really cool. That'd be neat. It's a weird one, but Trent Reznor would be kind of neat.
I'd go with either Derek Whibley from Sum 41, because he's just fucking incredible. Or if we wanted to step outside the box again, do something with Apocalyptica, that like symphonic metal band that has all the strings. I think that'd be really cool.
Can you imagine the band that we just like said right now, like Dave Grohl, Debbie Harry, Apocalyptica. And,
right? If we could just like compose a tour with like all these bands and just get them all together just with you guys and just make it happen, that would just be like the most amazing tour ever. I mean, I know like I'm like really small right now, but if this podcast were to somehow just like blow the F up and they just heard this and like we could make this happen, I'd be all over it. But
yeah, David Grohl, the line is open.
I know, the line is open. David Grohl, just come in to their DMs and just make it happen. I swear to God, just
They're buy you
super
lunch.
Talented. Buy lunch. They'll buy you food. Who turns down food?
So Dave Grohl, he's so influential to, like, you know, for people who don't know, we're from the DC area, and Dave is from Northern Virginia, and he owns three different venues in Washington, DC. So one's the 930 Club, which is iconic. He owns the Black Cat on U Street right there. And then he owns the brand new Anthem. So I figure if we hang out outside the Anthem together, we might have a good shot of, like, you know, pitching him the idea.
I know you guys bought up the infamous Hayley Williams and Paramore comparison. So now I feel like we do have to talk about this, because I feel that there are comparisons that are constantly drawn to your band, in the sense that every time I bring you guys up, it's like there's always this, oh, well, she sounds like Hayley Williams. And it's like, there's other female vocalists that you can bring up and, like, you know, develop a conversation.
Yeah.
About
the cage match, I'll put Marina over Hayley Williams any day.
Of course.
She'll win that fight. It's not close.
I feel like you are a multifaceted vocalist, and you're very talented. And I feel like, not that Hayley Williams is not talented, that's not what I'm saying by any means, but I feel like it's a disservice to you as a vocalist to constantly draw that comparison to you, to constantly and I feel like also it's very lazy to also draw that comparison to you. And not only that, to every female vocalist, it's very lazy to always draw that comparison.
I do agree with the lazy thing, but I personally am not offended when people say that. Like, Paramore is, like, my favorite band. Like, I love Paramore. They are, like, a mm-hmm. huge reason why I'm, like, even here and even doing this. Like, they're literally, like, my favorite band ever. And when I say, like, I don't think I would be here if it wasn't for Paramore, like, that's 100%. And when people say you sound like Hayley Williams, I mean, like, they're not wrong. She's, like, a huge influence for me. We don't have the same voice at all. But I mean, like, it's not incorrect to say, like, I'm not super influenced by her. Like, I am, like, I'm a belter, you know, I take a lot of songwriting inspiration from her, and I don't, like, I'm not trying to be derivative or anything like that, but I do agree with the lazy thing. I think that people just aren't educated enough about female vocalists and rock music, and that's the first thing they think of. And it's unfortunate, because it's 2021, and when people compare me to Hayley Williams, I think they're thinking of something from 2007. And when you really think about it, that was so freaking long ago. And when people are just like, you're copying Paramore or something like that, I'm just kind of like, well, not really. And at the same time, like, isn't it time for a new cycle of bands to come in? Like, Hayley Williams isn't really doing this style anymore. You know, she's put out like 4 albums that are nothing like our music. So
exactly.
I think it's a little lazy, but I also am not offended. I love Hayley Williams to the moon. She's just, like, one of my favorite artists and singers of all time. So that's just kind of my opinion. I'm never insulted. I'm just kind of like, can you just look into some other female fronted bands, please?
Of course. I don't really like to use the term female fronted either, because when I do look at you guys as a band, I see you guys as a band specifically. Like, I see you as a talented vocalist first and foremost. Taking female out of the equation, I see you as a talented vocalist. I can compare you to a male vocalist and, like, just see you as a talented vocalist. So first and foremost, I just wanted to get that out of the way, because I don't like to compare stereotypes. I just like to see you as a talented vocalist. I feel like a lot of times there are comparisons that are drawn between that, like, vocalist overall. And I feel like there's a line that gets drawn between female vocalist and male vocalist. And I feel like there's constantly, like, a headbutting of some sort. And I feel like a lot of times you just have to look at a vocalist just as a vocalist. That's just the way I see it. Do you feel that with the surplus of female fronted bands that are coming up in the industry now, is there a pressure to stand out?
I mean, no more of a pressure than there is for guys to stand out, you know? And in my opinion, when it comes to like the female friend and band thing, like I go back and forth on it a lot, but at this point, I don't really mind it because, to be honest, like there is a difference. Like you listen to a band like us and you listen to a band like Disturbed or something like that. Like there's an obvious difference in vocalists, and there's a reason why, you know, like at the Grammys and stuff like that, they say best female pop vocalist and best male pop vocalist, because there is somewhat of a difference. And the only time that I really think it's a problem is when women are excluded from certain opportunities in rock music, or when they're, you know, as you said, like treated differently for that exact reason, you know. But we're all on the same charts, you know, we're all playing the same festivals. It's not the same as it was 20 years ago. I do think that it's fair to acknowledge the difference, especially because of what women have had to do to come up in the industry and the genre as a whole. But I agree with a lot of what you said. I just do think it's fair to acknowledge that there is a difference. And I don't feel a pressure to stand. I mean, I feel as much of a pressure to stand out as any other band or artist feels pressure to stand out. You know, that's just par for the course.
You can also use it to your advantage too, in terms of marketing.
You totally can.
You know, if the term female fronted is like a genre, you have to probably assume it's almost considered a subgenre, which means there's probably not a whole lot of them.
Right.
So you can potentially leverage that to your advantage. Potentially.
So, something I think that's great too, is that with the, I think the surge of a lot of female fronted artists coming into the scene, I think it helps make the scene itself feel like a place where, because even though I'm not a singer, I remember like when I go, you know, when you go to concerts a lot of times, you look like the singer is like this, oh my gosh, I want to be like them. Even if I don't have a great voice, it's like, you see like your favorite singers and stuff. And I think having more female representation in the rock scene is nothing but a good thing for rock music as a whole. Cause I think it's just getting more people out to rock shows in general. And I think, as you know, being a guy in the rock scene, I think it's awesome, because I think it's just good for the genre as a whole. And I think us rock fans, whether it's metal or rock or, you know, indie rock, all the different subgenres, I think it's something cool to see just with that rock umbrella as a whole. And hopefully it translates well to more people just coming out to shows, especially coming out of this pandemic.
Well, and I do have another note to say too, is like I said about acknowledging, you know, the fact that there is a difference, I feel like acknowledging diversity as a whole is nothing but a good thing. I think we should be aware of more queer and people of color and, you know, people of different diversities and ethnic backgrounds being a part of the rock scene, because for a long time, it's really just been like white dudes, you know, just
exactly.
Just being at the front and center. And I think it's really important to give a platform and a little bit of an extra boost and a little bit of an extra spotlight to people that we're not used to seeing. Like Rina Sawayama, she's dipped her foot into like kind of some metal influences and stuff. And I've never, maybe like I've just missed it or something, but I've never seen a Japanese British woman do that before. I think it's freaking cool. And I think it's really cool to see, you know, more queer people getting the spotlight too. Like I think Lynn Gunn has been a really important part of that too. And I just think like, especially for a genre that's so popularized, especially in the Midwest and in less diverse areas, that, you know, highlighting and giving a spotlight to diversity, even if it's just someone like me, just like a white cisgender woman, I think it's just important, you know, to, you know, celebrate diversity.
Of course. Moving on to a slightly funner question, favorite places to perform and least place, favorite place to perform?
Where's your least favorite place to perform, Nick?
We have a friend named Jason, and his backyard is wonderful. Let me tell you that.
That was fun.
Wow. I don't know. I mean,
somewhere with a good sound guy. Least favorite place to perform, probably like a crappy basement. Like, yeah. I don't have a good venue, you know, or whatever. But the best thing about a venue is a great, you know, sound technician. The worst thing about a venue is a crappy sound technician. Like, I think that's just like, it's night and day. You could kind of play anywhere and we'd be happy playing on the floor as long as it sounds good, you know?
Yeah.
One of my favorites, I spent a lot of time playing before Crashing Atlas up in the North Jersey scene, is the venue called, even if it's still there, if it's condemned yet, it's called the Meat Locker. And with a name like that, it's weird because it's the best of both worlds. It's one of those places, it's like this unnamed building that I don't know who owns it. You go down this weird flight of stairs. It's a total dirt floor. Like, you throw your shoes away after playing a show there, but it's like this awesome punk kind of rock venue that's just very DIY. And that's probably one of my favorite places to play, just because the atmosphere there. And it's kind of like a staple up in the North Jersey music scene. So playing there was cool. As far as least favorite, I don't know. There's not like a ton that I really don't like, as long as they have like a good sound system. And, you know, cause I think you can have a venue that may not be a fantastic venue, but if you have a bunch of awesome fans there filling it up, it can be the best show of your life. And, you know, So my least favorite and favorite probably would be the Meat Locker. It's just that kind of place.
Yeah. It's true, because I mean, I was a Chicago kid growing up, and like as a teenager, like watching bands like Fall Out Boy and like Motion City Soundtrack and Spittlefield, coming up and playing in church. They were literally playing in church basements. So it just didn't matter where it was. It was just all about the vibe and like who was there, what band you were seeing. I didn't care about the four walls that were surrounding me. Like, I just knew that it was a feeling where I was at, and I knew something was happening. And those are my favorite shows, you know, when I know that something is happening, and as much energy as we're giving off, as the crowd is giving off to us, like, those are my favorite shows.
There's this one venue in Alexandria that me, Nick, and Marina played at one time. I'm not going to say its name out loud because I don't want to promote it, but I also don't want to obviously destroy their business, because let's be real, if I say one bad thing, gone. But
I know the one you're talking about.
You have to load in by like climbing up like a narrow staircase after like walking through their kitchen, walk up like a narrow staircase, somehow squeeze everything through the doors, and then play in a room which has like one single speaker, so like half a PA. And then, you know,
the speaker comes out of one side of the building,
right? Yeah. And then, when you're done,
side to the audience,
when you're done, you have to unload into this, like into this alley, into this fucking alley where your car like can barely fit, and you have to like turn it around with like an 11 point turn, right? And then you take all your drums, you take all your guitars out there, you're finally ready to go. Boom, your car's dead. Yeah, you gotta call AAA once everyone's gone, and no one's got a jumper cable because everyone's drunk.
And we all left you because we thought you'd be okay.
I love hearing Paul just like bash on certain venues that we play. He's like, and then the narrow
because of the parking. Yeah,
no, I don't like that place. I'll give a shout out to one venue that we've played a couple times. It's in Annapolis, Maryland. It's called the Metropolitan Kitchen, and yeah, it's a pain in the butt to get up those stairs, but the energy in that place, it feels like the floor is actually moving when people are bouncing on that floor. It's so weird, because like when you are on stage, you actually feel things moving. I always love playing there.
It's a pretty low stage too, so it's very much like you're eye to eye with people, and you can really like feel what kind of energy they're on. Mm-hmm.
Best memory you have either on the road or off the road, like whether you were recording or, you know, just being on the road, what would that be?
Well, my least favorite memory I'll say is whenever Nick eats a gas station hard-boiled eggs before we start touring. That's my least favorite.
Or gas station pickles.
The gas station pickles, like just... Oh my God, we gotta lock Nick in the car when we get to the gas station, because we don't know what he's gonna walk out with. It's gonna be a Slim Jim or something disgusting.
The body is the temple. I'll say something I always enjoy. It's probably gonna be Marina's least favorite, and it's not the gas station eggs. It is whenever I'm driving and Marina has to use the bathroom. I have this favorite catchphrase. Me and Doug say it too. It's like, we're making great time as we're driving. And she's like, can you please pull over? And I'm like, there's a rest stop in 50 miles. We'll hit that one, you know? And
I'm a vocalist. I drink so much water, and like, I'm just chugging water so that I'm good for the show. And they're just like, hold it.
Well, I hate to call you out on it, but it's like every time we do stop and then we finally get, you know, everyone situated like 10 minutes down the road. Oh, there's a Starbucks.
Hello.
Starbucks bathroom.
I want my latte. Give me a break.
I think basically any show that we play, like it's after the show. It's being together after the show, because there is a lot of stress that goes along with like putting on a good show. I will point Nick out here and give him a shout out. Nick does a wonderful job of like handling a lot of our sound issues. And, you know, I know that it's a big stress on him, and it's a big stress on everybody just getting ready for the show. And once we get through A through Z through the show, and we're off the stage and we're like, wow, we did it. It's like a relief thing. And we all look at each other, and those moments to me are the best, where it's like we pick up a drink of our choice and we cheers to each other that, you know, hey, another went down, another good job. I mean, those are my favorite moments.
Yeah. Hey, look at us moment.
Yeah.
I do kind of have a memory that everybody might find kind of funny. So we're in Indiana, right? And we're staying with Doug's awesome grandma, Mary. We love her so much. She's great. And we go out one night and we're just like having a good time. I don't think we had a show the next day or something.
It was like the day before the show.
I know what you're going to do. That's awesome.
We go out and we get like super stupid, right? We're just having like a really good time. We're out of town. Like, we just put on a great show. We're in a good mood. We get back to, you know, Doug's grandma's house, and we're trying to be really quiet getting back in and stuff. It's so funny. And Doug's like, we're all like, we cannot stop laughing at each other. Like, every time,
like, the worst giggles in the world.
The worst giggles, like, in the world. And we're all trying to open the door. And Doug's like trying to use the keys and he can't do it because he's so stupid. And he's like, this was easier in the simulation. We open the door and Doug's grandma is just sitting there like, you guys are so stupid. Like, she's just like on the other side of the door. Like, she just hears us.
She's got her arms crossed and she's just like shaking her head. Like,
and we're all like on the other side of the door, like, shh.
Yeah, I think us telling each other to be quiet, we were the loudest things in that entire building. It was hilarious.
Oh, dear Lord.
Paul, you're up. Give us a tour story, Paul.
That was my tour story.
The one with Jimmy with the vehicle last time. You guys getting lost.
Oh, that's not even a funny story. We just got lost.
It wasn't even getting lost. It was like
we had a trailer and it was just like a mess.
It was like it was like we made one wrong turn, and it's like, I know where we are. you're in sort of a grid. It's like. And so we just made one like wrong turn because I'm not paying enough attention to my surroundings. And we have a trailer on the other side. So like backing up is not normal backing up. Like if you try to back up this way, the trailer can go, but the trailer can also swing the other way if you screw things up. So we're in the narrow street. There's cars on either side. At like 15 feet in front, it says like one way street. And we're like, this isn't good. So Marissa, just me and Marina and I are like trying to like figure it out, and then she ends up getting out of the car and be like, all right, go like this way. It was the most stressful wiggling I've ever done in a car.
Me and Doug left our phones in the car.
Yeah,
we're out like with Jimmy, and he's like, yeah, just make three right turns and pull in this way, and me and Doug will guide you in. So they're gone, and like 10 minutes goes by, and I'm like, Doug, and I'm like, they should be here by now, shouldn't they? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, we should just give him a call, and we really left our phones in the car. So we're like,
then you guys just went and you guys just made a drink and waited for us, and we get back.
You're drinking whiskey by the time we finally got
there. They say if you love something, let it go, and if it comes back to you, it was meant to be, and you guys came back.
Hey, I believe in my team, no matter who the combo is.
We did it.
How do you feel being in a non-signed band has affected your music?
It's awesome.
I love it.
No one telling us what to do?
Well, I mean, every decision that we make, for better or worse, it is us. And we get to decide who we work with. We get to decide, you know, the songs that we want to create. And along with that, there's just a lot of other, there's other things that like go with it, where we can't decide what we want to do or who we work with. But I don't know, it's definitely it's chill.
It's always it's a trade-off. I mean, like, we take a little bit of the extra load of just back-end work, which, like, you know, we're musicians. We don't really want to be, like, in charge of all the PR and all the finances and all the planning and the touring. Like, there's a lot of stuff that we don't want to be in charge of. We want to make our music and we want to, you know, play shows, and that's what we want to do. But at the same time, it's like, this is our business, you know, and we're happy to take responsibility wherever is necessary so that we can keep our creative control and be happy and not feel stuck or pressured. I mean, if the right deal comes along and we feel like it's a good fit or something, we're totally open to that kind of thing. But as of right now, we can all just look at each other and go, you guys want to cover a Nightmare Before Christmas song and just make it happen on our own timeline and on our own accord, like the way that we want to.
I think what helps us too is that, and I think why other bands may not feel the same way we do, is I can say that this team right here that we have is the hardest working people I've ever met. Everyone is putting 110% in at all hours of the day. We're consistently on our group chats, like strategizing the next steps coming through. And I think that's just us as people tend to be very organized, and that's just kind of our nature as a whole. And even like when we were during the pandemic, I feel like a lot of bands may have been like, oh, well, everything's on pause. We were like, no, let's write an album, you know, let's do something. And I think it makes it easier being unsigned when you know that the team that you have internally is a strong team.
Well, it's also easier when I think everybody in this group has something different to offer, either business-wise or talent-wise. I think if any of us were like missing, it would just be like a really difficult spot to fill. So it's very important because, I don't know, all of us just kind of have our own thing that we're good at. We all have a good knowledge of the industry. We all know what we're doing with music. And it's just nice to be a part of a team where it's like, okay, nobody's confused here. Like, we got this.
Yeah. 10 years ago, it would have been different. You would have been more like, you know, apt to try and like nab a deal. But now with how technology is and how social media is, and we can put out a song and like that minute it's across the pond in, you know, in Europe, and that's unheard of now. So, I mean, self-distribution is more rampant than ever. And I mean, it's not to say that we'll never ever like sign to a label, but like Marina said, we want to find the right people that are willing to put in what we have put in, because we know what we've put in. Like, the proof is in the pudding, what we've done so far, just us four.
I want to talk about the album that you guys recently just put out. I know we kind of talked about this before. Shout out to Scene Daddy when we did the interview before about Black Sky Sunrise back in 2021, back earlier in 2021. Now that you guys have kind of sat on the album a bit, how has this album affected you personally now that you guys have kind of had time to kind of reflect on it? Would you change anything on it?
I mean, it's hard to look back at a creative project and say, I wouldn't change a single thing. Mm-hmm. Like, we all have stuff that we're like, you know, I mean, it's our first album. So you just take what happened and you learn from it and you go like, well, maybe next time we can try this and maybe something different will happen. There's nothing I regret about the album, but are there things that maybe we would have wanted to try differently? Like, maybe, you know, like, you never know what could have made anything better. But personally, I look at it and I'm just like, after all these years of grinding away at music and in different bands and by myself and just like trying to get better and you know, grow, I'm like, wow, I can actually like point to this and say like, I got a kick-ass record under my belt. So that's kind of how my life has changed personally. I'm just like, if anybody wants to hear my music, I can like very, with a lot of pride, be like, check it out. Like, this is good. And I know it's good.
Something I like when I look at the album, the one word that kind of comes to mind from it was like, is, and we were talking about for a while, this identity. And then we wanted this album to be the thing that is, this is what the CA sound is, because we've had, you know, this is not a new lineup or anything, but it was the first album that us four kind of wrote together. And I think for us, we wanted to kind of go in and say, well, what are we? What are our influences? And as opposed to saying like, this is the music that maybe the industry wants us to make, if we could make an album that would make us happy and we could listen back and be proud of, what would it sound like? And I think that was kind of like the mindset going in and making something that we're proud of. And like Marina said, I'm sure there's stuff listening back you'd probably want to, you know, maybe do a little bit differently, but I'm a huge proponent of, like, you know, focusing that onto whatever the next piece of art is and saying, you know, treating as like maybe we learned some lessons on things we could have done to be more efficient. Maybe stuff that didn't, that you won't hear listening to the album, but organizationally, when it comes to how we planned our releases, and maybe there, we wish we would have sank more money into this side of marketing, or spent more time on more videos doing this, or invested this marketing area somewhere else. So I think that was a big learning process for us, but I agree with Marina says, I'll sit down, every once in a while I'll listen to the album and I still enjoy listening to it, which I think is a big testament to us. Cause as musicians, normally you spend so long on the album, by the time it comes out, you're like, I can't listen to this anymore. We've listened to this song hundreds of times throughout writing, throughout mixing and mastering and tracking. And I still get really excited when I listen to the songs.
Well, also, we got that extra reward of getting to play them live now, so that's just like a cherry on top of the sunrise, you know?
Something is funny, side note on it too, sometimes the songs, when you're writing them in the album, like in the studio and even on the album, when you play them live, certain songs have a total different energy when you get to perform them live. And songs that we were like, oh, this will be a good one, will end up being like, oh my gosh, this is a fun song to play live. So a little side tangent.
This is what I do know about this industry, especially in the rock world. If people don't know, I mean, there are a lot of bands that you know and love, and this is no knock on them whatsoever. And I'm a big advocate of this, but there are a lot of like outside songwriters on a lot of records. And when I listen back to Black Sky Sunrise, and just to know that, Nick, me, Marina, and Paul, and our engineer Felix, like, we didn't have any producers on this record. Like, this was us writing this record. And for me, like, I take a look at that and I'm like, wow, we did that on our own accord. I mean, imagine when we have some backing, imagine when we have people, you know, in our corner saying, hey, like, you know, this can be done better. Like, but just the self-satisfaction to know that we did that on our own accord, that it's always going to be enough for me.
Yeah. I don't think there's many musicians alive who have like written, produced an album and not had like something they want to go back and change. Like, there's definitely, you know, like just a bunch of little things scattered throughout. Like, I don't think I have any like massive change that I would do, except maybe in one song, but
bongos.
That's one of the things that crossed my mind. I think for the most part, like, no one, I think we all expected this to be pretty good, but we didn't expect it to be what it became. I think it's pretty good. So I'm happy with it enough. No, I'm just kidding. I'm super happy with it. I love it.
that's a glowing review, Paul. Pretty good.
It's pretty good.
It's neat.
Maybe take a listen.
It's okay. Paul, if music doesn't work out, you should try and get into music writing. Yeah. Like, you should do like reviews and stuff.
Yeah, this song was cool.
Sammy, he's coming for your job.
Yeah,
I would
better watch out.
We could collab on a review. You never know.
Yeah, you got, I'll do the first. Say. I'll do the first word. You do the second word, and then we'll just alternate words until we have something like really amazing.
You give a beautiful review, and Paul just goes, "It was good."
I'll just do like the whole entire review and then I'll have you write the last sentence.
Yeah, exactly. I like gums.
Oh my gosh. Best advice you've ever gotten as a musician?
Don't quit.
Yeah, don't quit.
Don't quit. Somebody told me that is very successful, that has multi-platinum records underneath their belt, and don't quit, because the difference between someone who succeeds in this industry and someone who doesn't is they didn't quit. And I think that's pretty much why I've held on for all these years. And I think I was just waiting for this lineup to make it work.
So on my end, I guess on the songwriting side, good piece of advice I always got was, I noticed like a lot of times in bands, you have a designated singer, a guitarist, a drummer, a bassist. And I think when it comes to songwriting, each of those people kind of can tend to come to a song looking for their instrument to be the solution to whatever the fix is. And I think that ends up turning into a song that can maybe sound a little bit more chaotic. And I'd say as a whole, whenever you're writing, even if you're the guitar player, you know, approach a song with maybe the drums are the answer to bring this part together. Maybe it's a vocal part. And, you know, don't, you know, if you come to every solution that's a nail as a hammer, you know, you're only gonna be thinking kind of one way. You know, approach a song as a musician and as a kind of a songwriter, as opposed to saying I'm the guitarist. I think that's something we do in CA, is all of us pretty much play every instrument. And I think it's sometimes you can look at the composition and say, well, maybe I shouldn't be playing something complex here. Maybe I should sit back and let everyone else kind of do their thing on this part of the song. I think will help writing wise. And, you know, like anything else, your mileage may vary, but at least for me, that was always good advice that I thought I got that I wish I would have heard when I was younger.
And for me, I guess, like, I talked to a singer one time who is independent but still pretty successful, and she basically told me, like, especially as a woman, you know, don't be afraid to stand up for your art, because a lot of the time you're gonna have to fight to get people to listen to it, and you're gonna have to fight to get on stage and sing it in front of people. And then when you're writing it and you're working on it behind the scenes, you're gonna have to fight to get your ideas heard. And don't be afraid to fight for it. Like, you know, if you don't fight for it, then you're not putting your heart in it, and, you know, you're not giving it everything. And that means you're not really invested. So I, at least for me, like, I have a hard time sometimes standing up for myself and my ideas and my own voice. But I think that was something really important I needed to hear, you know, to make sure that when I do this, that I really feel like authentic, and I feel like I stood up for what I wanted to say and what I wanted to do.
Best bit of advice is to listen to more music. But seriously, you never know what you're going to hear that might inspire you when you're writing something or covering something or doing whatever. It really opens up your horizons, and it doesn't even have to be music you like, just anything. You're going to hear new stuff, and it'll shape the way you play. It'll shape the way you think.
It's just a dovetail off that. I'll speak for everyone. Surround yourself with good people. Like, the people that you have around you are your biggest influences in the writing, and they're going to be like your second family. So surround yourself with good people that are just as driven as you are.
Now, I think that is all very good advice. I think even on the music journalism side of things, that's good advice to follow. I can agree with you, Marina, on that side of things, being not only a woman, but somebody that is Puerto Rican and a woman trying to do music journalism on my own in doing this project. It's hard. It is kind of, you know, male dominated. I understand more often than not from your side of things, like, how hard it is to represent yourself and to, you know, be out there and to stand out. So I fully appreciate, like, on your end, for you being able to work as hard as you do.
It's a lot to get your voice heard, but I mean, like, if that's what you're called to do, mm-hmm. is to spread your message and use your voice, which you do because you're a writer, mm-hmm. you know, like, and you gotta stand up behind your thoughts, you
exactly.
know?
If you could change anything about the industry, what would it be and why?
Streaming payouts.
Payouts, fair pay.
Streaming payouts. Yeah, and it's not even, what's crazy, I think every artist, big or small, can get behind this, is even if we're talking about a decimal place for Spotify, for Apple Music, Amazon, Pandora, I don't care what it is, even a decimal place would help us make a living.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think it's asking that much. And for, you know, maybe I'll, you know, I'll get burned for saying this later from the higher ups, but I don't care. But when a CEO of a company that has never made a single song in their lives and is making money off of what we do, I don't think it's that much to ask when they're worth millions and millions of dollars. So it's just a bad look, in my opinion. But on the other side of it, it's crazy, because, like I said before, a click of the button, we can have our music distributed over in many different countries, which, you know, independent artists 20 years ago couldn't have that. So I suppose it's that give or take kind of thing. But at the same time, I still don't buy the whole not giving that fair pay. I mean, it boggles my mind when people ask me about that, have no idea about what streaming actually is. They're like, oh, what do you make, like a penny per stream? I said, if I made a penny per stream, I would walk into this building that we're in right now. I'd be like, this place is marvelous. I'll take it. Like, we would legitimately be rich if we made a penny per stream. And it's not even like a quarter of that penny. So I don't even think it is. Is it, Nick? A quarter of it?
It's like a fraction of an eighth.
Fraction of an eighth.
There's a bunch of zeros and then an eighth.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there might be I think there might be a seven before that, but yeah. But yeah, I think it's just a restructure. These companies, they're constantly upping like the subscriptions, and I think that just one little decimal place, it's going to help musicians, especially in these times where touring, it's so up in the air right now. And that's how most of us make our living, and like selling the merch at shows. And like now more than ever, we're trying to thrive and live off of what we are doing right now. Good recordings still cost good money. That has never changed. Yeah, you can do it more than ever like at home, but good recordings are always going to cost a good sum of money. So it's just not adding up right now. So I think a restructure of how we are getting paid via streaming.
I've got I guess my biggest gripe, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with kind of how some things in social media work. It's a good example, like we on YouTube, however many thousands of subscribers we have, or on Facebook, however many thousand followers we have, it's almost like you can't interact with them anymore in the fact that without putting ad money behind it now. And it's like, you will have a big group of people who've already taken the time to say, I like this content, I want more of it. And then, you know, well, you can upload a video, and we've seen, I think, probably in the past 5 years, it's changed a bit to where unless you're throwing money at Google or Facebook, your content doesn't get pushed to the people who want to see it. And it's, I think that can be a little bit frustrating, that change where it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, we're happy with just having the people that have taken the time to support us. We just want them to know when we're doing something without having to sink $500 in, so that the people that have already discovered us know we released music. That would be kind of nice and make it a little bit easier on our end. And then I think it's just kind of a social media qualm in general. I feel like a lot of people on social media nowadays, you get a lot of anonymous kind of keyboard warriors that have nothing better to do than to try and put people down on YouTube comments or Facebook comments. And it kind of makes me, you know, yearn back for some of maybe the days where it wasn't kind of like that as much, and kind of the old, you know, dirt floor playing DIY shows and stuff, where it's kind of miss it. I'm just being a bitter old man.
I think we need more drummer jokes in the industry.
Paul, don't you get enough virginity jokes as it is?
Well, that's not a joke, though. That's real life.
One day you'll lose it, pal.
You know, the new one that I heard, it was, how do you tell if the stage is level? The drummer is drooling from both sides of his mouth. I like that one. So yeah, I'd say more. More.
All right, so we have more questions before we head out here. One message you would like to give to your fans?
Thank you. Anyone that's taken the time to stream or support or buy merch or even just like or share or comment on it, you know, we really do pay attention to all that stuff. Even if it, you know, every single person that leaves a nice comment somewhere, we, you know, we all like it, and, you know, we talk about it, and it makes us excited. And if it wasn't for anyone that did that, we would just be four people making music, and that's it. Especially with Marina can probably talk more about it, like even with the crowdfunding campaign, like if it wasn't for the people that really support us, this album wouldn't exist. We wouldn't be able to get to go out and perform music, and it's, you know, it really just brings like a real joy to our lives. So I just, a heartfelt, bottom of my heart, thank you guys so much.
Well, and a thing for me, like I said earlier when you asked about, you know, like what got us into writing and stuff like that. There's a lot of people who, the people who connect with music really deep, are looking for a sense of belonging and a sense of understanding and community. And I used to get that from, you know, and I still do, from communicating with other fan bases, with other bands that I really appreciate, and, you know, connecting with people about the music that they like. But there's something really extra special about building a new community of people and friends that connect with our music, because it's just a lot more personal. You know, I used to connect with people that all, you know, like love Pierce the Veil music, and that was special to me because I related to that. But the music that we write, that's from my heart and soul, and having people connect with that, it's like that times a million. And even more so, we have like a Discord, and we do the crowdfunding, and we're just so like active with our fans on social media and online and stuff. And it really does make all of us feel a little less alone in our daily lives. It does kind of just like boost our morale a little bit. And we hope that we just do the same thing for them too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I was that kid at shows, like just geeking out about seeing these bands and talking about these bands with my friends, and that sense of community. But I never thought in a million years that even one person would care about something that, you know, I was a part of writing, and that will never ever be something that I take for granted. I think about person that has ever bought a piece of merch, you know, listened to music, did anything to support us. And no matter how big or small that is for us, that's never going to go away. And that's what I want to continue on with this band. And we genuinely just love every single person that even takes the time to just, you know, click a little heart on our stuff. So, yeah.
I would tell them, thank you. And if you think we deserve it, please share our music.
Yeah.
He's got a plug.
To the point, Paul.
No,
I love it.
No, I mean, and that's a big thing. I appreciate that, Paul, because that's something that doesn't cost any money. You know, I understand that times are tough, and, you know, we are living in crazy times right now. Just a simple thing like a share button. I mean, it does the world for us.
There's nothing better than a share. I mean, like a dollar is nice. Like, sure, I'll never say no to money, but like we'll put money into getting our music in front of people. So like, if others can just do that for free, like, you know, assuming they think we're worth the time and effort, you know, if they don't, then we don't deserve it, of course. But if they want to help us out, that would be really good for us. And once again, thank you in general. And thank you if you do that.
I guess the big question now is, what's next for you guys?
I was afraid you were going to ask that.
We're having that meeting tomorrow, I think.
I have to ask, guys.
Karate lessons.
Yeah. I have to ask.
Yeah.
You knew this was coming.
I think Nick's taking up Muay Thai. So, you know, there's that. Yeah, we're actually talking about what is going to be next for the band in 2022. And I think, well, short term, this Saturday we're playing, and I'm going to plug them, we're playing Decibels on the Rocks in Portage, Indiana. We love that venue. They support us so much, and they get us the coolest shows, and they give us the opportunity to headline, which is what we are doing on Saturday, which is awesome. After that, gosh, we're meeting with an actual producer on Sunday. So we're going to be probably talking about new music and what we want to do in the future and how that's going to look for us. So there's going to be a lot of things happening in 2022. Our goals are to play a couple festivals next year and get ourselves out that way. And we're going to be playing a lot. I think with everything going on in the world today, hopefully things are going to be on the downswing with everything going on with the pandemic. I think we have a goal as a band that we want to continue to push the envelope as far as like our live shows. And we want to get further out. We want to play to as many people as we possibly can.
I think with this album coming out, like we put a lot of pressure on ourselves releasing Black Sky Sunrise, because it's like we kind of wanted to make a statement by releasing an entire collection of art and stuff. And I think now that that's out there, we have a little bit of flexibility if we want to do like we just decided to do the cover. Maybe we want to do a couple singles or something, or, you know, maybe Paul wants to release a drum solo. You know, I don't, probably not, but I think the kind of doors wide open when it comes to different things we can kind of be pursuing. I know we're really working on kind of building our social media presence up and everything like that. So if you guys like us, I mean, we'd love you to check out a lot of our socials. We're going to have a lot of unique content going out everywhere. I know we want to get into start doing a little bit more on the streaming side of things too, and just, you know, finding ways to get this art that we've created in front of more and more people. I think that's kind of at least the short-term goal on things. And then I think us as musicians, it's kind of goes back to what we were saying before. It's like, why we do it. It's like, I can't imagine not playing and writing music. So I think we're just going to keep doing what we love, you know, and I don't think you got to really twist our arms for it either. It's like, we just like creating art. And I think, you know, that's something I'm looking forward to getting back into the lab and making some new tunes.
Yeah. New music. I mean, Nick turned to me like a day or two ago. He said, Paul, what do you think we should do next? And I'm like, I think we should write some original music. I think we put out a few
more content. Dude.
I think we put out some cool covers recently. I like them.
I was just waiting for you to say we should just break up and then,
yeah,
you know, buy an ice cream
no.
truck.
It's over. No. You guys got the album. It's done.
Hey, Nick, it's funny that you think that Paul has that decision making power.
So like,
Paul's like, we're done.
Oh man, Paul's leaving. No,
actually, I mean, you forget
that we're breaking up at like the end of a podcast. Oh yeah, we're done. No, that's it. Sorry, guys.
You forget who has all the passwords for the LLC. Who's got the company code?
Paul's
codes.
Gonna legally dissolve the Crashing Apples company.
Well done, Paul. Well done.
So that's some 3D chess moves right there, bud.
Yeah. I'm actually deleting Crashing Atlas LLC right now and changing it to
Paul's
House LLC.
We all just disappear like the Thanos snap. It's like he deletes Crashing Atlas.
Why are we called Spicy Waffles now?
Next album that comes out is Spicy Waffles.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, don't underestimate that name.
Well, thank you guys for being on here. It was a pleasure having you guys here. Really love talking to you guys about the new single, the new cover single that you guys have released. And thank you guys for coming on. I hope next year when you guys come back, we will have new music to talk about.
With Dave Grohl.
If he's listening to this, please.
He's gotten this far into the podcast.
Hey, and
if
I'll
you've
tell you
been what, that far into this podcast, please.
I'll tell you what, Dave, like, you know, you don't even have to open up your mouth. You can literally just drum. You can take Paul's spot.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, I've got another confession to make. You're our drummer.
How about this? If Dave Grohl can wrestle me for the spot, if he can win, he gets it.
I bet he would.
He might. He's what is he, like 6'1" or something? He's pretty tall.
You're kind of slimy, Paul.
He's got big hands.
Oh my God. We can put it like an AEW style tent match.
Front page of the New York Times. Paul challenges Dave Grohl. Not Paul Grosser, just Paul challenges Dave Grohl to a wrestling match.
Cage match.
They'll know who Paul is.
The spicy waffle challenge.
Spicy the guy from Spicy Waffles.
Yeah.
Heard of them. Oh my they God. Have a guy waffles.
Paul's Spicy Waffle Garden.
I like
that's
it.
That's gonna be my restaurant.
Let's use it.
Yeah. That's also the name of my like Wi-Fi. Oh. You know, Nick's is probably like Nick123. Mine is Spicy Peas Waffle Garden.
Oh my God.
That's actually like I'm not kidding. That's actually my like Wi-Fi like
not connected
title, whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called.
Now we know what
it's not my password.
Is your password Paul?
Paul goes to his local hospitals for his Wi-Fi service, so
Sammy, thanks so much for having us, and thanks for always supporting Crashing Atlas. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, for real.
Thank you so much.
Of course, yeah. Not a problem. Like I said, I appreciate you guys coming on here and supporting this new project. Like I said, it means a lot that you guys have come here to do this with me. And like I said, Into the Void is more than just a website. It's more than just, you know, me pounding a bunch of keys to deliver, you know, content every week for everybody. I think it's me and you guys coming together and the fans just coming together to appreciate music together. And I think if I can create that space for people where we can all just kind of do that together, I think that's a beautiful thing. And I'm glad that you guys are able to do that with me today. So it's amazing.
Always and forever, Sammy. We love
you. Awesome. I love you guys too. Well, thank you guys. And I will see everybody for another episode of Into the Void next week, guys. Take care. Bye.